The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hi there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to another episode of the Babylon Project podcast. This is Raul Wybera, and joined as always by my co-host Jim Arrowwood and JP Harvey. How are you guys tonight?
I'm good.
I'm good too.
How do I put it? One of my favorite radio hosts in Los Angeles used to have a phrase, and it's kind of become one of my catchphrases. Better than most, not as good as some.
Yeah.
So that kind of describes me tonight as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's something.
Tonight, we are talking about what episode, Jim?
Season 3, number 14, Ship of Tears.
Aha. And this is, I think, as we talked about last week, a Bester episode.
Indeed.
A very interesting Bester episode.
Yeah. And
say, a guy we love to hate.
Yep. Yeah. And he's not the usual Bester. He's a little bit different this time.
Yeah, we get to see some different sides of the guy.
Yeah.
This episode is actually different in a few other ways as well. Typically, we either have episodes that are all arc, all one story, not much B story behind it. We have stories that are A stories that are arc, B stories that aren't. We have stories that A story is not arc. I don't want to quite say filler, but it's just not advancing the big arc story. And the B story is arc. And in some episodes, like Grey 17 is an example of that. The A story wasn't that great, but the B story saves it. This episode, we have the A story and the B story. And it's not a lot of heavy-duty fast action in either, but both are intense and both are pure art.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the stuff goes back to not even season one, but the pilot movie. And I guess the best way to put some of that in context and get us started would be for you to give us a summary, Jim.
Coming right up.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
While out test-flying new Star Furies, recently acquired by Babylon 5, Sheridan detects an object in the distance. When he arrives to investigate, Sheridan discovers that it is Bester flying his own Star Fury and was experiencing technical problems on his way to Babylon 5. When they arrive at the station, Bester is immediately put under lock and key to prevent any station personnel from being scanned. Sheridan sends Ivanova to talk to Bester because, as a latent telepath, she would be able to tell whether Bester is scanning or not. Bester explains that he has some important information for Sheridan. Bester explains that the shadows are talking to President Clark and that he is listening. Psi-Corp has also been infiltrated, and people in important positions are being replaced with non-telepaths who can gain control over the Corps. Further, Bester discloses that there is a large shipment of weapons supplies that are headed for the Shadow's base and is traveling through hyperspace and guarded by Shadow vessels. Realizing that if the weapon supplies were prevented from reaching their destination, it might cause problems for the Shadows, Sheridan takes the White Star out and attacks the convoy. A few of the Shadows are destroyed, and the rest run, unwilling to fight. When they arrive back at the station with the cargo, which is discovered to be hundreds of blips, or telepaths that have managed to not be a part of Psi-Corp, or have evaded taking the sleeper drugs and have been enhanced with brain implants. When one of the telepaths is awakened, she interfaces with the station systems. Bester is angered when he realizes that the telepath is his lover. Garibaldi consults the Book of Jaquan and learns that the Shadows are afraid of telepaths, and it is deduced that they have kidnapped this particular group to use as countermeasures against being defeated by the telepaths. Suddenly, news arrives that the Brakiri are under attack by the Shadows. Before Bester departs, he pledges to Sheridan that he will do anything he can to help, and that their war is now his war. It has been some time since Sheridan promised Jakar that he will be brought into the War Council, and Jakar is becoming agitated by this. Delenn talks to Jakar, telling him about how the Centauri are being helped by the Shadows in the routing of his people. While Jakar realizes that if knowledge of the Shadows' involvement has become too widespread, it might have prompted the Shadows to act earlier and faster. He tells Delenn that he will eventually forgive her for withholding information, but it will be a while. Well, there it is.
And that's a lot of there to he is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Sometimes.
Which actually, I think is brought up in this particular, yeah, right, this episode.
I prefer to go with the X-Files slogan, trust no one.
Yeah, especially when it involves someone like Alfred Bester.
Absolutely.
Character files opened.
Well, obviously, guest cast, we've got Alfred Bester, right, / Walter Koenig. But who else do we have?
Okay, we have Joan McMurtry as Carolyn Sanderson. This is her only appearance on Babylon 5. She's also been in genre television shows on Alien Nation, Dark Skies, and Tremors.
She was in Dark Skies?
According to IMDb, yes.
Okay. Well, I've got to watch that show someday. For some reason, when you first said Dark Skies, my brain heard it as Dark Matters, which incidentally is a good show and something I would highly recommend to any Babylon 5 fans.
Yep, there's 3 seasons of it and it's been canceled.
What?
Yes, yep. There won't be a 4th season.
Aw, crap.
So that frees up some TV time for you, Raul.
Yeah.
Huh?
You don't have to start it now.
No, I finished. I'm just about to start season 3. It came out not too long ago on Netflix, and I was going to binge it.
Yeah. But this is not the Dark Sky or Dark Matters podcast. This is.
Yeah, it'd be a damn short run if it was, wouldn't it?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well,
got me salty.
As long as we're not on Fox and we don't have Summer Glau, we should be okay. We won't get canceled.
Talking about TV and TV programs, ISN is back.
Hang on to that idea, though, because we've got someone else to talk about. Speaking of ISN being back.
Yes.
We have another guest cast.
They have a new anchor person named Allison Higgins, who is portrayed by Diana Morgan. She has a few credits, mostly in television appearances as a news anchor, and she is apparently a former news anchor for a television station in Virginia and was the first African-American female news anchor in that state.
Wow.
Aha. So she's got some cred to be playing that part.
Yeah, she knows it very well. So that's our guest cast, and she is our anchor.
Initiating plot analysis.
And like JP said, ISN's back online. Yay. Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
the explanation, attacked by saboteurs. Fake news is still alive and well 300 years from now. Of course, it's been alive and well for thousands of years, most of human history, so who'd be surprised?
And, you know, it's not Maggie.
Nope.
Definitely not Maggie. But this is no longer Maggie's ISN.
No. Yeah. The set is falling down around them to the sounds of gunfire, and they're claiming they pulled the plug themselves.
Yeah.
No crime, martial law, popular.
Right. It's become a propaganda machine.
Yeah. You know, and Franklin, I think Franklin sums it up when he paraphrases George Orwell. He who controls information controls the world.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, the way Orwell phrased it was, who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much the idea.
Very accurate.
So that moment of joy when they realize they get their TV back kind of ends quickly when, Susan who said, turn it off?
Yeah. Well, they know the real score, and it's just too bad, but this is what it's going to come down to. Now we have, not only is Clark in control of everything political, but he's also in control of the news.
He controls the means of force, and he controls the means of information.
Mm-hmm.
For those of our listeners in the U.S., that's the First and Second Amendments, basically. Speaking of control of force, Sheridan is out trying to get a handle on the new Star Furies, which appear to be atmospheric capable.
Yeah. Apparently they were acquired from the Churchill after the Churchill was destroyed.
Yeah. While he's getting the feel for these new Star Furies, what was the class of ship that they were called?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, me
I can't
either.
Click.
They were cool, though.
Yeah. They get a distress call, and as long as they're out there, let's put them to some real work.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Anytime Bester's involved, it is a distress call.
Yeah. A distress call from Bester. The ship is ID'd as Black Omega. And, oh, gosh. You know, this is a great episode for quotes, which is true anytime that you've got Bester on the show. And it's true anytime that you've got Delenn doing really serious work, and the same with Andreas.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But the line here at the beginning with Bester, you've got to get that one, Jim.
Well, hang on.
But you're not in visual range. Is there a problem?
I noticed the Black Omega insignia on your Star Fury. Black Omega is an elite unit attached to Psycor. Telepath can only scan you if you're on a direct line of sight, so I am making damn sure we don't get that close.
Very good. I have something for you, Captain. Something very important. If I came in unannounced, your people would shoot me down before I got within 2 kilometers of Babylon 5.
Mr. Bester, we no longer have any ties to Earth or to the Psycor. So we don't have to put up with you or your games. Now, I am sitting on 4 brand new unidirectional pulse cannons. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't blow you out of the sky.
Because you're curious? Kill me, and you'll never know what brought me all the way out here. I think if you weigh that against the brief satisfaction of blowing me out of the sky, you'll do the right thing. Captain?
I'm thinking it over.
Ah.
that one line there just cements it.
Yep. Not just the line, but Bester's response.
Yeah, oh, the look on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And, ah.
There's definitely the impression that he's trying to decide whether or not Sheridan is serious.
Yeah. Well, he knows his, I'll tell you what, his information better be good.
Yeah.
Or there may be an airlock with his name on it.
Or a room to be walled.
Yeah.
Well, that sets us up right there for what kind of an episode we're going to be dealing with tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And we very quickly get Jakar on the prowl with the B episode. And by on the prowl, he's going after Susan first. And I love his line, infinite persistence runs into the curvature of time and space. So we've got some Einsteinian phenomenon going on with Jakar's patience.
Yeah. In any case, Jakar wants his due. He wants payoff on that promise.
Well, it's been made some time ago, and Jakar's kind of right in a way. It's being put off.
Yeah.
And I think they're just a little bit, they've been a little bit nervous about dealing with it.
Yeah. Well,
and we'll see that.
Jakar has been very patient. Okay. And, mm-hmm. and he has followed through on everything he said he would do.
Above and beyond.
Yes. And his Narn guards have helped out. So it's time to bring him in.
Yeah, that it is. Poor Bester comes into an empty dock, to an empty disembarkment, except for that dozen or so heavily armed guards around the corner.
Yeah.
I do like the discussion. You know, it's like trying to figure out why is he here? What else is there for him to scan or learn? I mean, in a way, that's true. They've been pretty upfront and to the point about everything.
Well, there's still some secrets out there, though.
Yeah. In particular, I could see them not wanting to know. Since we do know there's a connection to Earth, and they know it now, too, that there's a connection to Earth, Psycor, and the Shadows, I can kind of see why they wouldn't want him to know some of that information, Certainly.
Well, everybody on the crew is squeamish on getting scanned. Some with very good reason.
Yep. So what does he do? He sends that person with probably the most reason not to scan in alone with him. Alone.
Yeah.
Primarily because she is the one person that could tell if he was scanning her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a neat scene, you know, where they have their huddle and then Sheridan holds Susan back and explains to her what the plan is. And she says, "You're not going to do this to me, are you?" And I thought that was, you know, given her reaction to Teeps in episodes and seasons past, I thought the way that she said that, you know, it wasn't, "I'm not going to do this," or anything like that. She was very willing, but with protest. And I thought that was a cool scene where she was showing her loyalty and trust for Sheridan.
Right.
"You're not going to do this to me, are you?" As if she's saying, "If you tell me to do it, I'm going to do it."
Yeah.
So kind of a neat continuation of their relationship as a commander and a first officer.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Very much so.
Well, anyway, if Susan goes in and she gets scanned, well, there it is. If not, if there's no scan, they can trust him a little.
Little. Yes.
A little. Yeah. Speaking of which, Susan and Bester, well, he doesn't scan her, but that doesn't make the encounter any prettier.
Right. He provokes her.
Oh, yeah. He does a low blow.
The needling about her mother.
Mm-hmm. So he's not going to scan her, but he's going to make sure he gets under her skin.
Right.
And I suppose he figures that he's going to get her to reveal something she doesn't want to reveal.
Oh, she revealed something, all right.
Yeah.
Four fingers and a palm across the face.
Uh-huh. Busted his lip open, too.
Yeah, that was a good slap.
Hopefully that was makeup and not a real slap. But it was sure convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it seems that while the Psi-Corps might be in bed with the Shadows, Bester isn't that fond of them. He thinks that they're being played, and while he is all for telepaths and telepaths being on top and just following the natural, as he puts it, the natural evolutionary order, he's very suspicious about what the Shadows are doing, and he thinks he has a way to stop them, and this is where the enemy of my enemy is my friend comes in.
Well, you know, Bester is used to being in control. And,
right.
And now, with things the way they are, with the Shadows getting involved in his organization, as well as the government organization and everywhere else, that's taking his control away. And it's also going to take control away from the Corps.
Right.
So he doesn't want that.
You know, sometimes it comes off as though Bester runs the Psi-Corps. And this episode is going to give us a bit of a feeling that that may not be entirely true.
Well, it isn't, but he does have a great deal of autonomy.
Now, I've got a question I'm going to bring up in just a bit regarding that. But I'm going to hold off on that one for a moment, because the Jakar problem,
mm-hmm.
while this is going on, Sheridan and Delenn are discussing it. And we get an idea why they've been punting, because admitting Jakar into the War Council and filling them in on the background means filling Jakar in on pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that everything, we will find, is not very nice as far as what they allowed to happen.
Well, and as far as Jakar is concerned, it, mostly.
Right.
Because they were in the line of fire. Well, anyway.
Right. We'll be catching that one as well.
Yeah.
When we get a little, Bester's filling them in on a shadow convoy.
Mm-hmm.
I asked you to get some of the clips of this just because it's got some of my favorite lines in the entire show.
Okay.
And we've got to do that. And then we can go ahead and chat it out.
Very well.
So how did you find out about all of this?
I'm a telepath. Work it out.
Okay, you've delivered your message. What do we need you for now?
Locating a ship this small in hyperspace is extremely difficult. The gravitational incline, competing beacons, energy surges. You could search for days and not find it. Unless you just happen to have along a telepath rated P-12. Someone like myself. Trained P-12 can pinpoint a ship's location by focusing in on the thought waves of those aboard. For some reason, hyperspace amplifies the signal considerably.
So how come I've never heard of that little ability before?
We kept it to ourselves. Otherwise, the military might start putting telepaths on the front lines. We're not expendable. Mundanes are.
That would be us.
Got it in one, Mr. Garibaldi. It takes generations to breed a telepath. Mundanes breed like rabbits, supply and demand, nothing more, nothing less. Captain, we don't have a lot of time. Without me, you'll never find them. So, do we stay or do we go?
Do we stay or do we go?
Yeah, got it in one, Mr. Garibaldi.
Oh, yeah.
I love that line.
Yeah.
That also has been adopted as one of my catchphrases.
Yeah, but, you know, really in this scene, what we really learn is that Bester is an elitist prick.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that pretty much sums it up.
You know.
I seem to recall sometime in, was it perhaps season 1, that I was challenged by someone in this conversation, at least mildly, about calling, what did I call Bester? A slimy villain?
It could be. I don't remember.
And that was season one.
Right.
Yeah, there's something interesting about Bester here. You know, that arrogance that we just saw, that elitism, that was the second time that I recall he used the term mundanes.
Right.
You know, he referred earlier, in fact, the discussion where he reveals the plan, the shadows. For as arrogant and confident as he is, it makes me wonder if his appearance at B5 and the willingness to talk about this plan is motivated by real fear, but he doesn't come across as scared. And so it makes me think, well, I can tell these people my plan because they're useful to me, and I'm taking his plan at face value. These mundanes are useful to me. They're also, they breed like rabbits and they're expendable. But he seems to be truly afraid of what could happen. And he doesn't seem to be troubled at all that if he reveals the plan, that somehow the mundanes could short-circuit that plan. So he's still totally confident and arrogant about the fact that there's teeps and then there's mundanes, and the teeps are going to win, which is a phrase I think he used earlier. That's just a
he's
matter
confident
of fact.
That evolution will win out eventually.
Right, yeah, that's the phrase.
And I think you're right. He's scared enough that he is revealing what is undoubtedly a fairly significant piece of classified information about telepaths.
Right, the tracking of
their ability to track.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting to me that even in that fear, if that's what it is, he's still thoroughly arrogant. He really believes what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To the point that he says, I'll tell you my plan because it doesn't matter. You know, we'll beat the shadows and you all will still lose to us.
And you just gave the segue I needed for that question I mentioned earlier. Is Bester off on his own chasing this down rogue? Because everything kind of points to this not necessarily being something that's a sanctioned action.
Interesting.
If you remember one of the, you know, well, actually, no, he hasn't used that line yet. He's answerable to other people. He might have a little more freedom to choose his actions. He might have stayed within his instructions or commissions and actually going down, tracing this down and coming to Babylon 5 of all places to do this. You can certainly bet anything that President Clark would not have approved of this.
Oh, absolutely not.
Well, we leave that question for a moment, and there'll be more time to chew on this. We just use Delenn and Jakar sort of as a segue, meaning Jakar coming to Delenn. And you know, I think this is the first time we really have. There's going to be a contrast to make here.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first time Jakar has come to Delenn's quarters like this.
Mm-hmm. The first time he did, it didn't end well for Jakar.
Right. Right. And keep that in mind because I'm going to ask for some contrast there.
Okay.
But this takes us back to, well, let's just say Bester seems to like the White Star.
Yeah.
And the captain's chair, sort of a James Kirk pose, stretching out in it.
Uh-huh.
The off to the side, very Kirkish.
Yeah, he didn't have it very long. Get the hell out of my chair.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
I wish I had a $5 bill for every time I've said that in my own living room.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's neat, too. Bester didn't delay too long. He got up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I bet he did.
I think he liked the ship.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, trivia moment. This is the first time, at least according to Bill Mumy, this is the first time that a Star Trek original and a Lost in Space original work together on a show.
Oh, huh. I hadn't thought of that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know for certain if it's true, but I do know that's something that, at least at the time, Bill Mumy was claiming.
Yeah, well, it would make sense.
And he wouldn't mm-hmm. lie to us.
Oh, he's cool. He's cool.
Totally.
So what was the statement as Bester was admiring the ship? There was a pretty good line delivered. Do you remember?
Oh, you got to have that, JP. Come on now.
Try not to drool on the controls, Mr. Bester.
Yeah. Like I said, this episode, if you want to start snagging out quotes, you know, the whole episode is one quote clip from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's difficult to pick and choose what to grab and what not to.
You know, I'm just having a thought here, just based off of what JP had said. I am wondering, and I don't want to get into the what ifs, but the chemistry between Walter Koenig and Bruce Boxleitner is outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if that is what helped keep Bester coming back. I mean, yeah, it's a great character, but he comes in and he's like, he's been a part of the cast all this time, just based on the way the main people, particularly Boxleitner, and I would say second, the chemistry, you know, the Garibaldian character as well.
Mm-hmm.
But just the way they interact. Next, we get to what is, in my opinion, you know, if you go to the Lurker's Guide, Straczynski, the way he described writing the scene is when you have two actors of that caliber, you write the words, you leave everything else as minimal as possible, and you get the hell out of the way.
Oh.
And it worked.
And it worked. Mm-hmm. Delenn's confession. You know, we've got two moments here now in a row. Late delivery from Avalon and then this, where Mira Furlan's capabilities really get to be showcased.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she confesses pretty much everything to Jakar. And I think you've got this. This is a long one, folks, but it is really worth it.
Yeah.
Some must be sacrificed if all are to be saved. At first I took that as revelation for the future. Now I see that it is as much about how we got here as about where we are going. I think that one sentence is the greatest burden I have ever known. You're right. Nothing would have been changed. Except that my people would now be a dead race.
You have come a long way, Jakar. Further than I could have guessed. Sheridan's promise binds me as well as it does him. We will take you into the council, Jakar. Someday, when all this is over, perhaps you will find it in your heart to forgive me.
Perhaps. But not today.
Yeah, and as far as this one is concerned, you could tell the both characters were hurt by this.
Yeah.
And, you know, they really sold it.
When Jakar's sitting in that chair and she starts to talk to him about what actually happened to, you can watch the air just go out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Totally believable.
And in selling it, remember where Mira Furlan's from. She remembers the bombings of Kosovo.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, she literally lived it. So she's got some real life to pull on out of that. But contrast this when she says you've come a long way. That's a direct reference back to the pilot in before season one with the gravity ring. So, yeah, Jakar really has come a long way.
Yeah.
From there, we get back to the main story. You notice the White Star takes out that convoy actually rather easily, at least where the fighters are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But a full-blown battle crab shadow vessel breaks and runs.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
No, and it surprised everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens right after they grab the transport.
Mm-hmm. Right. Basically, the White Star is more or less defenseless, even more so than usual. Yeah, the big question becomes now, what is in that ship?
Yeah, what is it? What is it that scared the shadows so bad?
Yeah, and Bester's answer is just weapon supply.
Yeah.
Except those weapon supplies have Psi-Corps logos on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, when they get back, what's the word I'm looking for with Sheridan? Does annoyed fit?
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
How are these telepaths actually weapons?
That is going to be the big question.
Yeah, we have a large number of people in stasis with hooked up to something, not quite knowing
right.
what it is.
Some sort of implant messing with their wetware.
Mm.
Yeah, delivered anywhere else, that would have been funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Franklin's his wife. Somebody definitely messed with her wetware.
Yeah.
I've heard that phrase used mm-hmm. before, especially in the medical device community. But they pull a bracelet off of her, and Bester seems to recognize that bracelet.
Yeah, she's a blip.
Mm-hmm.
P11 or 12.
So we're talking Psy-Cop territory here.
Mm-hmm.
More good acting, by the way. When he sees that bracelet, it doesn't seem to register at first.
No.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just, I thought, phenomenal when you watch his face change as he thinks he knows what that is, and then his mm-hmm. his you know, his demeanor changes just dramatically in the best of ways from there as you watch him come to realize what he thinks or who he thinks that belongs to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, they're not telling us yet, but we're clearly seeing another side of Bester mm-hmm. here.
Yeah. But she's a blip, which means she's refused to cooperate with Psi-Corps.
Right.
So even though she has the power to be a Psy-Cop, she's refused to do that. And then we get this little twist later on.
Uh-huh. Speaking of twists, what did you think of that surgery slash shadow vessel montage?
Hmm.
Not so much the graphics, but the ideas that they were getting across.
Oh, yeah. You know, there was definitely a human shape in the center of that shadow vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And the
not necessarily size proportional, but...
Right. But the implications are very disturbing.
Yeah, that was an oh crap moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay. This, for me, is the weakest part of the episode, so I've got to point it out. Where did all the wires come from?
Yeah.
I mean, she integrates pretty dang quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, did she spawn those, or did they come out of the ship, or both? But they were there fast.
Well,
yeah,
by
it looked like they got torn out of the ship.
Yeah, by the jumble of wires and conduits and all different kinds of things, it definitely looked like it was part of the structure of the station itself.
Well, one part of the answer to that is she's clearly more than a simple telepath now, because she asked for help from Alfred and then tries to zap him.
Yeah.
Going Emperor Palpatine is not something that you really expect to see out of a telepath.
Yeah. Well, she definitely seems to have some sort of axe to grind, but it's not personal.
No, Garibaldi kind of gets it in one.
Mm-hmm.
Tosses out the Psi-Corps badge and...
Yep.
And she explains it. Go ahead and roll it. We've got the clip.
The machine says kill. To protect. The sign hurts us. We cannot hear the machine.
What machine?
Life. In my mind, I am the machine. We join. We fight. It is dark. Terrible. Please, make it stop talking in my mind.
I will.
Oh, God. Oh, what have they done to me? What have they...
And what's important there is what happens right there at the end, too, because Bester is doubled over in pain, getting the full image of what they did.
Mm-hmm. So, do we think that perhaps Psycor itself was giving these blips over to the Shadows? Or was it something Clark was involved with? Or could it be the deal? I mean, we know that Morden is on Earth in Earth Dome and working with the president.
You have human-made Earth-made cryotubes that have Psycor logos on them. Work it out. obviously, Bester didn't know what was going on, though.
Mm-mm.
Because we get the full background on this. Essentially, the two were lovers. They had, you know, Bester had talked before about a marriage. Well, here's where we find out it was an arranged marriage. It was basically just a genetic pairing. It wasn't a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolyn, this lady and Bester, were actually going to have a baby. And she ran rather than join the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things where it comes out, and actually in a couple of areas. It's like it was talked about earlier, Bester not liking to be in control. Well, we see just how much he doesn't like it, because when he makes that comment about even his authority having limits, it's like those words are ripped out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this backs up the statement at the beginning of the show when he talks about, or early in the show, when he talks about how people in key positions inside the Corps had been swapped out, things like that. So we've got Psycor under its new rules and apparently allegiant to the president that could take people like his former lover and put them in the capsules and manipulate their wetware in concert with the Shadows. And then you have Bester, who I thought at this point had all but said that this is going to go back to is he their rogue? He's clearly still loyal to the Corps as he knows it, but it's almost as if he's saying that's not the Corps. I'm in the Corps that doesn't exist anymore. It's not the same as the official Corps. And that
his loyalty is to the telepaths.
Yeah, and the, you know, the original Corps, the Corps as he knew it.
Yeah, and the Corps' mother, the Corps' father, and that ideal.
And it's been usurped by the new president and by the Shadows. And so that
we're going to have fun when we read the Psycor trilogy.
Yeah. That limit of his authority then, though, could have been two things when it comes either to her personally or to all of these weapons, is he either didn't know. And when he says things, you know, what's in the transport? He says, well, I was told it was weapons parts. He may have not known. Or he may have known, but still kind of out of fear or compulsion or loyalty, couldn't act and didn't want to say it. Didn't want to admit he had real limits. But now he's at a point where he's emotionally damaged, shocked, and so an admission of the limit of his authority comes out.
So, and all that, JP, would lead me to believe that your former theory that he was just following what he was told, it was weapons parts. He didn't actually know what was on that vessel.
Right. He doesn't look at the manifest. He just says, I'm going to... Well, I think he knew they were weapons that would help the Shadows, but I don't know that he knew specifically what the weapon was.
Yeah, what their nature was, yeah.
Actually, he did know, or at least was, later on at least, he knew that they might have been telepaths. He didn't know the context or why they might be weapons parts or anything else.
Mm.
But he did have reason to believe that it was telepaths that had been kidnapped, whether it was given to them by his superiors or not. And part of the context there is that he knew the Babylon 5 staff probably wouldn't expend any effort to save telepaths. Which I think he's probably wrong.
I think he's definitely wrong.
Yeah.
And we find that out later on, too.
Mm-hmm. But it connects. Yeah, we do. Toward the end of season 4.
Yeah. It isn't the telepaths that they're against. It is Psycor and Psycops and that control.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And Raul, back to the thought that just spawned this conversation. I left this episode not knowing. I left the episode thinking that Bester only knew bits. He knew about the potential for telepaths and weapons. He didn't put it all together right until he saw it. And then it was fueled further by the fact that he knew who at least one of those people was. And I think that's when it all gelled in his head. That this whole problem tied to the solemnness of the discussion that Delenn and Jakar had, I thought in this one episode, if you hadn't already figured out the weight, the scope and the magnitude and the weight of the Shadow War, you just got it in this episode.
Uh-huh. You just got it. You're right.
So,
and Bester sums it up. Your war is now my war.
Yeah. And, and when we find out the living beings are a central operating system for shadow vessels, everything comes together. It all makes sense.
Yeah. Which is something that had been given, that had been a little tidbit that had been thrown out to us before, but it was just a little concept that was out there. Just what that meant, just the disgusting, chilling, disturbing nature of what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not you're sitting in a command chair running the controls. It's...
You're an integrated system.
Right.
You're an integrated circuit plugged into the system.
Yeah.
Until now, it's been, I can outthink you and my hardware is better than your hardware and we're going to have a war. And we got to have the better or the more or whatever the combo is in a very traditional military sense, so that my side wins. And this just changed the entire nature of the war. And it amplified the statement back when Jakar and Delenn were talking where, what was the phrase? Having to choose between the death of millions over the death of billions or of whole planets. And, Delenn utters those words or something like that. And that may be the thing that kept the breath away from Jakar and may have dampened his anger. He followed that with the statement that we heard in the segment about the phrase that was his greatest burden. The light came on maybe fully for him. Delenn seemed to have understood from the start how awful this was. And now we've got all these other key players who have just been hit right in the face with how this is. You thought you were going to have a war with the shadows. You had no idea what the war was going to look like. And now it's right there in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're seeing just how ugly, because you can pretty much assume that every shadow vessel that's destroyed, every shadow vessel that's beaten, isn't going to be, a crew of the enemy, quote unquote. It's going to be killing some innocent victim.
They're not crabs.
That's been
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and that speaks a lot to the actual ugliness of war that only a person who's been in war can understand.
Yeah, it's something that I'll be the first to admit I can't understand. I find it incredible, especially talking to you guys or having talked to my father, you know, people who've served in the military, how well Straczynski seems to get it.
Yeah. Well, I was in the Army. I never saw a combat. So, but, you know, I like to, when I think about how bad war can be, I think about a friend of mine who was a forward observer in Vietnam, and he carried two silver dollars in his pocket that had shrapnel in them. He was a forward observer in Vietnam, and their life expectancy was not very long. And he came in to see Full Metal Jacket, and he was in there, and he stayed for the entire movie. And when he came out of there, he was so shaken that he just walked out of the theater, and he sat down on a bench, and he was literally shaking from what he had seen. And it took him a good 15 minutes to calm down before he could actually get up and leave.
Wow.
So, you know, and wow, I just don't, I can't imagine being affected by something like that so deeply.
But Straczynski did it. He, not impact like you just described, Jim, but, you know, one of the, it's not unique or novel or clever for me to say this, but, you know, it shows up in movies and all, that the quickest way or the easiest way, I think, historically for an army to do what it needs to do is you find a way to dehumanize the enemy. Well, the shadows don't look like humans at all. The ships, you know, they're crabs, right? We get glimpses of what the shadows actually look like, but it's easy to just put them in a box and say, yeah, but that's the shadows. And so we can kill them. We can fight against them. We don't feel bad when they die.
Mm-hmm.
And now the enemy just got humanized.
Well, which is exactly why the
made innocent,
which is exactly why the shadows used Morden,
right,
to approach everybody.
And so what does this tell us about Bester? When he says, your war is now my war, did we just see a side of Bester that maybe we couldn't believe was there before?
I think so.
Well,
but I'm going to caution you, be careful about humanizing Bester.
Yeah.
Well, see, Bester is out for Bester.
Yeah.
And now the shadows have stepped on Bester's toes. So he's going to gravitate towards wherever he figures he can get the best result. Yeah. He is not to be trusted. He is a very scary individual.
He's not broken, that's for sure.
No, not at all.
All that arrogance that we have seen, he's even into this
really
show.
Honked off,
yeah,
though.
I think he got put back on his heels for at least the first time we've seen. And a little bit of humanity comes out of him. Not at the expense of his arrogance or, you know, the telepaths and the mundanes and all of that. But Bester had a moment.
Right.
Yeah, but just a moment.
Yeah. Still love to hate the guy.
Actually, I love the character because he brings such a neat dimension to the show.
Yes.
But I tell you what, I would not trust this guy any farther than I could throw a Star Fury.
Even a new or an old Star Fury.
No, either one.
Yeah. Now, they use living beings as a central operating system, as the core CPU. It doesn't say that they have to be. In fact, we've got the feeling that they haven't been telepaths. Why are the shadows using telepaths for their to drive their ships? That becomes the question.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of brings Bester's your war being my war and the Chakar thread together.
Well, not only that, you know what it what else it explains? What happened to all the Narn telepaths?
Yes. Well,
they were put on
Delin brings.
They were put on shadow vessels 1,000 years before to fight that war.
Or killed.
Mm-hmm.
And the shadows.
No. Actually, they weren't used on the shadow vessels. They were killed out of fear, because it was Jaquan and the last of the telepaths. And this gets us to the closing up session, because Mike has an epiphany reading the book of Jaquan, and he calls that code 7R to explain. Yeah, because the shadows wiped out all the Narn telepaths. It was Jaquan and the last of the mind walkers that were able to drive the shadows off of Narn.
Hmm.
And,
well, we know that the shadows were wiped out, or excuse me, the telepaths were wiped out by the shadows, but we don't know how. If they were just outright killed, were they abducted, enslaved? Who knows? If it requires a telepath to run the ship.
No, that's just it. It doesn't require a telepath.
Hmm.
It requires a human that's been, or not a human, it requires a sentient that hasn't been properly prepared.
Oh, I see.
Because we know certainly in a few episodes who was plugged into a shadow vessel. And that person was absolutely not a telepath.
Okay.
Well, there's something that telepaths can do that a non-telepath can't. And that's what we learn here at the end.
That is exactly what we learn.
And so if you can present telepaths to the shadows to use as the central operating system, and those telepaths happen to be corrupted, what do we learn they can do?
Well, we find out that telepaths are able to jam shadow vessels.
Right.
What the shadows are trying to do by plugging telepaths in to the shadow vessels are create a telepath-proof, a weapon that can't be jammed.
Hmm.
Something immune to the telepath effect.
Okay.
But I left thinking these guys, these weapons, weapons from Bester's point of view, I guess I left not knowing what was really happening here with this cargo. The shadows obviously were escorting it. They were going to the shadows, my assumption was, to use as the central OS. They were marked they had Psi-Corps logos on the capsules. So whether, I would assume seeing that the shadows would know or assume they're telepaths, they could be people that Psi-Corps just scooped up to get for them. But so my impression was not that, well, that the shadows knew they were telepaths. What the shadows didn't know was that they had been manipulated, or that Bester and others like him could manipulate those weapons to be weapons against the shadows, not against the humans or the sentience. So I left not really knowing enough about how those were supposed to be used and why the shadows were happy to escort them and be close to the transport early on. But then when the White Star grabs the transport they book, that implies to me they were afraid of Bester.
Exactly.
But at the same time, why is Bester trying to nab those? Is it just to deny the shadows' use of those weapons parts, or was there something else akin to what his old girlfriend, his old lover, was starting to do to B5, where she jacked in and started to take over the ship? Were they going to do something else to the shadow vessels once they were installed?
I think in the case of this shipment, at least, I think Jim said it right in the beginning. Bester was looking out for Bester.
Yeah.
This had nothing to do with trying to defeat the shadows.
And that ship full of teeps was a gift wrapped up and sealed by President Clark.
Yep. And if you remember, for some reason, Clark thinks he's got something up on the shadow.
Right.
So now here's something to keep in mind, too. The telepath are something that the shadows are afraid of. It disrupts their system. As Sheridan points out, they've got a weapon. They've got a weapon they can use.
Mm-hmm.
Who has been breeding, or shall we say, well, I guess that is that I was going to say encouraging the evolution of, I think maybe a better word is almost breeding telepaths, and I don't mean the Psi-Corps.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us.
Who seems to be really interested in encouraging telepaths amongst the races? Our friends, the Vorlons.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind, because it's like, there might be something bigger to this than what we know.
The Vorlons?
Yeah.
As Kosh would say, yes.
And
that would be his whole explanation. Yes.
It's something worth keeping in your head as far as Vorlon motivation, especially as we go into next week's episode.
Mm.
Yes.
Because the shadows are coming out of the shadows, shall we say. It's not their puppets that are attacking Brakirin. It is the shadows now attacking openly. And that's how we end this episode.
Susan closes us out. They're not hiding anymore. They're on the move.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Like I said, there might not have been any boom, but there was a lot of meat in this episode.
If this was a grenade, somebody pulled the pin.
It's a good episode. A good solid one. A lot of information. And we've got ISN back on the air, but nobody cares anymore because you can't trust them. We got Bester who comes in, you can't trust him. And, there's not a lot of trust to go around here.
No.
And on a positive note, we have Jakar introduced to the War Council.
Yeah, he got his due.
He's in.
So now we have to see what he's going to do with it.
Right. By the way, cool room that we have never seen before.
You said. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that is quite the place. Kind of looks like my basement. No, I'm just kidding. Except there's not enough clutter to be my basement.
In the central council meeting room there,
yeah.
I've got to point out, I love Jakar's line of, do not thump the Book of Jaquan.
Yeah.
As long as we're closing out with some lighter moments here. This episode does not feel like it's the end of the episode.
No, it doesn't.
No.
In a lot of ways, it feels like, okay, this is the first part of more, even though it really is the end of the episode.
No, there's more to come.
Oh, much
more. You know, when you talk about Susan's line about the shadows coming out and openly attacking another race, then, you know, that's way open-ended, and we can only expect it to escalate.
Escalate? Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Jim.
Yeah.
I'm just actually flipping through the episode list here, and escalate. It is escalation from here straight on in.
Oh, yeah.
Next week, boy, what a miss. Have you seen the episode title for next week?
Interludes and Examinations.
Yeah. Boy, is that an understatement. What a misnomer. An interlude? Well, you usually think of an interlude as more of, shall we say, an intermission.
Did you just call Kosh an intermission?
Right. rather than an interaction. And that's really the understatement of the series in a way, because there's definitely some interactions.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be happening is, except for one episode, you're going to be wondering, how do they take it to the next level after this?
Oh, we managed to.
Yep.
But we're going to wrap this one up before we start thinking about the next one.
Yeah, folks, this is definitely one of the more, next week's, just to be warned, is definitely one of the more momentous episodes. Mm-hmm. So definitely give it a watch before you listen.
Yep.
Just to keep it fresh in your mind.
Well, should we close this one out? Oh yeah. Was there any boom today?
No physical boom.
Ah.
A little emotional boom.
Yeah. What about tomorrow?
There's always boom tomorrow.
Especially this next one coming up. There's going to be a lot of boom tomorrow.
Get ready.
Always. Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yep. Good night, folks.
Good night. Hey, JP, say good night.
Good night, JP.
Good try, Jim.
Just like the Waltons, you know?
Yeah. Good night, John Boy.
All right, here we're...
You do that one, I'm going to start singing.
We're out now.
Yep. Good night, folks.
Podcast terminated. Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.